Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dragged into Turbo Lasers, a miniature wargaming podcast from the people behind the blog Between the Bolter and Me. And in today's episode, we're back from Adepticon 2024, where we interviewed a whole host of cool people. And yeah, so sit back and enjoy. Hey everybody, this is Greg Wire here at Adepticon. This is Friday morning. I'm here now with Johnny, Witchhammer Studio, and Eli, Redwet Skeleton. How y'all doing?
Doing great. Good to be here.
I'm doing wonderful. It's a glorious day, and I'm excited.
Yeah, so my brothers and I, Johnny and Eli, we arrived in Chicago yesterday, and we were at the convention for maybe a few hours, walking around, talking to a bunch of people, saw the grim dark hallway, met up with all those people, and now it's the next day in the morning. We haven't gone back to the convention yet, but I think we're gonna go there soon. Does anybody have thoughts about yesterday? I haven't been to Adepticon before, but Johnny, you've been there a few times.
Yeah, definitely just kind of got me stoked about it. Again, renewed the excitement. Now I'm just ready to go buy stuff.
Yeah, buy things. I'm hoping to not buy that many things, in that I already have plenty of stuff that sits in a closet, or more likely it sits in Adam or Eric's closet. Like, I buy it and give it to them.
I'm already just thinking, what am I going to tell my wife?
Yeah,
I can. When I show up with all the things I purchased,
I've got a limited list. I think of definitely new. And then I'm like, okay, I know you don't need everything, but that doesn't mean I won't go home with twice as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't. There's, I guess, the dealer hall which has a lot of people selling stuff. I've only been to a few other conventions before, so I don't know how this will compare to that. They certainly weren't hobby-related conventions, though.
I recently went to the Oddities and Curios. Yeah, Curiosities.
How was that?
It was good. That was the last convention I went to. It was an expo, not a convention.
I guess the last one that I was at was the Under the Dice Fest, and that seems like at Adepticon here it will be a lot of that, just in the grim dark hallway.
Yeah.
And perhaps that will be the coolest thing about Adepticon, but we'll see.
It's super exciting to see how much bigger that is. That was like just an extreme bigger version of what it was 2 years ago, you know? Like,
well, Johnny, it's my understanding that you are basically one of the originators of the Grim Dark Hallway, right?
Yeah. An OG, if you will.
Put us in there. Like, yeah. You know, it wasn't anything we'd planned, but 2 years ago, it was they just stuck us in a fucking side corner, you know?
And was that that you had reached out to Adepticon about you trying to do a 40 case event?
Yeah, it was James Ward. He had done two previous Ink 28 things at Adepticon, and they put us in different spaces every time, you know. But it was COVID, and everything had just started to open back up, and he wasn't going to be able to make it. So I was like, well, I'll pay for it, you know, and talk to the people that he talked to, and that's just where they put us. And we didn't really even have anything planned, but it turned into a bunch of people that were like minded just kind of found it, you know. So and now it's turned into this.
Yeah, now it's
a lot more work on their end.
it's the thing that people know and talk about, like the In Rust We Trust people, everybody talking about it. And I guess it was Steve Under the Dice Steve, Hofscum Steve, that has coordinated most of that this year, and perhaps had they'd done it also last year.
Yeah, last year they did like a big Mordheim thing, right? It was something like that. Like last year I missed and like been kicking myself for it for the past year. So,
well, it's fun. That's why you're here this year.
Yeah, this is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, my brothers and I were planning to set up some Vestarian stuff and hopefully play a little with some of those things that we're working on, and hopefully we can get at least a game in with all of your stuff too.
I think that's the only thing that I really have on the list, you know, like play some cool games.
Yeah, I would say that's the same for me as well, and I guess now that maybe record some talking with other cool people, but we'll see. I don't know, I guess perhaps we can call this to a close and we can perhaps talk again once we've done real things.
Yeah. Nice. That sounds good to me.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Let's go get it.
Thanks. Yeah.
We're on our way. Hey, everybody. It's Friday at Adepticon, and we're here with Uncle Adam, who needs no introduction, but nice to have you here, Adam.
Well, thanks, Ivan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, great. It was great to see you. I feel it's an interesting thing having watched like so many of your videos and just to hear that kind of voice in the background. It's like, I know that voice. Like,
I get that a lot. I get people sometimes that recognize me when they hear me before they see me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I guess this is actually our first Adepticon. Like, I imagine this isn't your first rodeo here, but have you been a few times?
I've been coming to Adepticon since 2010, I think.
Okay, yeah, so that's a good...
It's a not very long drive, so that's helpful.
That's nice. Yeah. But yeah, so how has it been this year? Anything stand out particularly exciting?
It seems really busy this year in comparison to last. I mean, like, obviously there was a bit of a slowdown after the pandemic and all that. And
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
And now it's definitely, I feel like there's got to be 1,000 more people here than there were even last year.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I'm not counting heads, but yeah. It's got to be a lot of people, and it's crazy. So yeah, I'm really enjoying seeing, like, you know, the big booths are cool and stuff like that, mm-hmm. in the vendor area, but it's the small booths that I'm always interested in a lot, just to see, like,
just
kind of what interesting
new ideas
are coming out,
and
I really
innovations
like that
and
yeah,
things,
for sure,
like, yeah.
For sure. So I've got a bunch of friends that are doing a bunch of painted stuff, you know, a bunch of stuff in the competitions, mm-hmm. Golden Demon and the Marvel Crisis Protocol one, and a bunch of other ones. And I'm also really glad to see that there's more than just one painting competition now, you know?
Oh, that's
nice.
There's
a bunch of them. Like, Resin Beast is a big one.
Yeah, and, like, they've done that a couple years now, and it's cool that it is, I think, continued to grow.
It was like Crystal Brush, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of glad that it's spread around a little bit more.
And particularly because stuff like Golden Demon is great and all, but the fact that there is, like, you know, only gold, silver, bronze. Like, I feel right. Some of those competitions at times can be a little defeating if you put a lot of time into it.
Oh, for sure.
You don't really get anything. Often, like, you don't really even get feedback unless you really go into it and ask for it.
Especially with Golden Demon, you're not going to get feedback.
Yeah,
I
understand. Yeah.
Like, you don't know who the judges are. You're not going to talk to anybody. They mm-hmm. may send an email, but they may not.
You don't even know criteria or anything.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
It's just,
yeah. No, I actually entered my first painting competition last year at Nova in D.C.
Yeah, okay.
And that competition is the
like the polar opposite,
capital,
right?
It's amazing. First of all, it is open, so you can paint whatever kind of models you want, and
that's
cool.
That's nice.
And it's also divisional in that there's apprentice, journeyman, and then master category.
Yeah.
So I had never, though I've been painting for over 20 years, I had never painted a, like, competition, like, display piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I entered under apprentice, and it was the first display piece I'd ever done. I worked on it for, like, a month just before the convention, and they also do the thing where it's not like a podium where you've got first, second, third, and everybody else, you know, have a nice day.
Yeah,
it's, you know, you've got best of category. And there, I think, is maybe also best of show, but I don't remember. But there's also, you know, like, I was in single figure, I got a gold.
Mm-hmm.
So that was awesome. That was very
cool.
That's but there was, like,
amazing.
Three or four other people who also got golds in that, you know, for that category. And then there's people who are in silver and people who are in bronze and all that kind of stuff. And so it's a great competition. And the other thing about it is, like you mentioned, you're going to get feedback. And also, mm-hmm. the people who are judging it are unknown quantity and really, really well-known painters.
That's cool.
Eric Swinson, it's Sam Lenz, it's Vince Venturella. It's like lots and lots of like really high-end painters who are doing the judging. And so that's very, very cool.
And it's kind of nice that, like, if, you know, you fit the criteria for silver or gold or whatever, like, you know, you get an award, you get feedback, and you, it's not as much like, well, subjectively, like, this person, they favor, like, vampires a little bit more, and, like, that pushes, and, like, you know, I'm sure everyone tries to remove as much of their bias as possible, but it, at some point, like, if it is all these, like, these are, like, the best here, like, you have to... you know, make some choice, but I don't know. It's nice that there are just different painting options.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's maybe a painting competition at Las Vegas Open, but there was. I don't remember what it's called, but there was one, actually. I do remember that this year. I don't know if they've had it in the past, but there was definitely one this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that stuff's really interesting, but I'll be honest, the entire month I was working on my piece, I was thinking, you know how much other stuff I could be getting done?
Yeah.
Like, I could get so many guys on the tabletop if I just, you know, was just painting for tabletop quality. But it was, I don't know, I got bullied into it by a bunch of friends, and I figured, all right, I'll give it a try. And so far, it was okay, but we'll see.
Oh, yeah, and it seemed to have paid off. Yeah, and it's nice to maybe do something a little bit different from the norm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. One just unrelated thing, I really appreciate... your YouTube channel and how much you promote other games and indie games and such. Like, I feel it can be a difficult thing for developers to try to generate interest and people know, like, what's going on. But I also think now is, like, as good a time as ever that there are so many interesting things coming out and resources to help people create games and share them that it's really exciting.
I would say technologically, it is the best time to publish it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, so Bill, BerserkerWorks, Bill.
Yeah,
I can't think of his last name, unfortunately. But, like, he published a game, Mech 28.
Yeah,
it's a TXT file. Like, he gave me a printed copy when I saw him a couple of days ago, but it's just the same. It's like ASCII art. It's like a TXT file. You can just download it for free. Like, anybody in the world can get that as long as they can find the website.
Yeah.
And that is the kind of the area that we find ourselves in now, because we can publish, like, Vince and I are publishing our own games through Snarling Badger Studios, and we're doing it through Wargame Vault. So we can have full color, you know, printed cover, soft cover, black and white insides, but we can still make it super accessible. Our most expensive game that we made was the last game that we made. Majestic 13 is 144 pages, and it's $19 plus shipping.
So,
like, we're not interested in trying to make a bunch of money. We're trying to get things in people's hands.
And that fact that, like, if it's through them, like, they probably do the printing and the shipping and stuff. So, like, you don't even have to, like, order all that stuff and have your basement filled with boxes and have to ship them stuff out. Like, just even stuff like that.
Exactly. And just because there's so many electronic versions, there's PDFs. If you just decide to skip print altogether, you can do PDF. But if you want to do print, there's options for that as well. Like, you can get stuff printed, like, normally, like, traditionally, and have a basement full if you want to, and ship them out to people. And there's, like, all these little things that make it so simple. The hard part is getting seen and getting known.
Yeah.
And people ask me from time to time, like, how do I get into doing this? Like, how do I get into doing, I want to make my own war game or whatever. I always tell them to start by building an audience. Like, you want to know, well, what software should I use for layout, or who should I, like, what books should I read to learn about game design? And I'm always like, start building an audience, start a blog, start an Instagram, start something like that. Start putting out stuff that people dig, and then when people start to like it, and then once you get your product, then you can say, look, if you like all these posts I've been making, I bet you'll like this game that I've designed. And so, again, that's just a way to do it. But again, in my mind, and the way that Vince and I are doing it, stay indie, stay, like, we don't do a Kickstarter, we don't do any of that kind of stuff. We're just like, we can do it, you know, easily and cheaply, and still put it out there and get it to a bunch of people. I have a kind of personal motto, and it is, I'm going to get it as a tattoo real soon, actually, and it's just start small, grow slowly. And I just think it's a really, I think it's the way to go. I think some people are like, I'm going to make this game, I'm going to start a Kickstarter, I'm going to make $500,000, I'm going to do all this kind of stuff, and it's really hard to pull off. So just don't do that. Just start and do something really cool and indie.
Yeah, no, that's true. And then, like, I think starting small like that, I mean, maybe it could eventually go to something like that.
Oh,
but,
for
like,
sure.
You kind of, it probably helps to wet your feet and you know, game design, layout, like all these things, and not have to like, oh, and like next month I have to send out 5,000 copies
right.
of something.
No, absolutely.
And like I need to figure out a shipping way to ship and not lose money on
it's just like
this
in miniature
thing.
Painting, like you don't start by painting a Warhound Titan. You know what I mean? You start by painting like some army men or some dudes you bought off of eBay that were used. You just reprimed over them. You want to start small.
Mm-hmm.
And but I do see people all the time, especially within wargaming, who are like, I absolutely love that Storm Surge model from the Tau, you know? And
yeah.
I saved
yeah.
up $170 and I bought it, and then I started painting it. It was my first model ever, and now I think I ruined it. And you're like, well, A, you didn't ruin
yeah,
it.
Yeah, nah, it's
But
it's
B,
fine.
Probably try something else before you decide to, you know, jump onto the big dog there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah.
And even for stuff like that, big models like that, or particularly if it's not just straight plastic.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It, to get a Forge World model to actually look nice
to get it to put is to actually glue to itself together and not be warped all to yeah, yeah.
without needing a heat gun
yep.
and
oh, yeah.
all that stuff like
friend
I don't
of mine
know,
did
it's kind of terrible.
A friend of mine did the Fire Raptor a number of years back.
Ooh,
and he
boy.
Sent me a picture, he texted me a picture, and he had I think 20 of those little plastic clamps, like all,
mm-hmm.
just trying to get the nose to stick together. We got those two kind of Gatling
yeah,
guns.
Yeah.
He
it's
was like,
not
this thing
for the faint of heart.
No, he's like, this is the worst thing that I've ever tried to build. And I'm like, yep, I get it.
I mean, I guess they've gotten a little bit better at that with like digital design and stuff, but it's still like, it's
yeah,
not,
yeah.
it's so hard and it's, yeah, maybe not the best place to start.
No, no, for certain. For certain.
One of the other things about the, like the indie game design and stuff, which I think is also very cool, it also sort of speaks to sort of what Games Workshop and a lot that was like in like the older days where there were just a
sure.
bunch of people getting together, like, making something they thought would be cool.
Right.
And
yeah,
then, like,
yeah.
if you make something you think's cool, there are certainly going to be other people who are going to be like, whoa, this is cool.
It used to be super hard to find those people. And
yeah.
now it's kind of super easy. I mean, just
yes.
the internet in general has made it so that when you are like, I am super into, like, dark, gothic, Japanese shogun in space, there's got to be other people who think, oh, that's really cool.
Yes.
I like that concept, you know, or whatever. So yeah, no, absolutely, and that's what's awesome too is that the idea that you have to try to beat other companies, the idea that you have
yeah.
to be like, oh well, you're never going to take on GW, like, well, I don't want to, I don't
no,
want,
yeah,
let them do their thing, that's cool, great, they pull people into the hobby and whatever, and that's fine, but if I can make a game that people like and enjoy, I mean, like yesterday up in one of the Utopia, wherever those rooms
mm-hmm.
are, me and Vince were running our Tanks for the Apocalypse game,
yeah.
which is the game that we published in the zine. We had 30 guys who were all absolutely happy to be there. They all made a 28-millimeter tank,
mm-hmm.
and it was just a giant scrum, and it was a lot of fun. We did it for like 2.5 hours, and it was awesome. And we just got so many people who were like, this was so much fun, and we're like,
that's
what you want, honestly.
Well, and I think that, or just from the sounds of it, Tanks, like that's a cool way to incorporate a slightly different community that
sure.
has very similar skill sets that can easily be incorporated into the more like 40K sort of stuff.
Well, a lot of
that's
those guys
kind of
have
amazing.
Never built a World War II
mm-hmm.
like kind of, you know, like 28-millimeter like tank.
Mm-hmm.
Like you either go to like Warlord or all those different types of companies
yeah.
out there who make that kind of thing. And because the game is like Tanks for the Apocalypse, a lot of them, like, you know, Mad Max their stuff up,
uh-huh,
you know, all that
uh-huh.
kind of stuff, which is also awesome. That's, yeah, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, good excuse to step out of your comfort zone, do something different,
yeah.
maybe even find a few new YouTube channels of how people go about painting
oh, for sure.
stuff, like Night Shift or something, and
yeah,
try
yeah.
some enamels or something
yeah.
that maybe you haven't done because you've came up through Games Workshop and, like, you're following that very strict formula.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that different games giving you a reason to venture out and try different things and in quote unquote like give you permission to do something a little different
I think
is great.
It gives you permission to try to be artistic. I
yeah.
think if you decide to stick
in
to
a
this
safe
a
way.
Specific if you're going to stick to a very specific ecosystem, I'm going to play just Age of Sigmar, or I'm going to play just
yeah.
Bolt Action, or whatever, not just to pick on GW. You're going to just do that one thing, and especially if you're doing it from the aspect of you want to be a person who plays a lot of like tournaments and things like that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You're a very competitive player. That's what I was looking for. That's fine, but then at that point, the hobby is not really that important. It's more the game,
yeah.
which is, again, that's your journey, and that's cool. But if you like the concept of like, I've never been an artist, but I do like painting minis, you can get both artsy and fartsy very easily by getting into like indie stuff. If you're like, I got to paint Space Marines the Space Marine way, well, that's not going to give you as much creativity necessarily. But when you're like, what if I start using like oil paints on these guys that I got from the grocery store that are like weird little figures that were in the toy aisle, then you can start doing some kind of, I think, really interesting stuff.
Yeah,
and it's low impact. It's not like, oh, I got to go buy a paintbrush and, all that stuff and start painting like on a canvas. It's like, no, I'm messing around and kitbashing with toys and stuff, and it's a lot of fun.
And the cost of entry is like so much lower, like in a lot of these indie games. Like you can just buy like a model or two, or put together a model from stuff you already have.
Yeah.
And like, I think that in itself is rewarding. And yeah, you don't need to spend $500 buying a bunch of models that maybe you're not even going to assemble.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, there's obviously people who are into that, and that's fun. And I mean, I don't know. I still kind of like Warcry. I think it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like, well, that's about it right now. I mean, as far as from Games Workshop, I'm interested in seeing what they do with Age of Sigmar 4, because I've always liked the Age of Sigmar models a good deal. Like, I'll be honest, I love painting Space Marines. They're fun. They're quick.
They're
just a neat thing. Especially Primaris. I know a lot of people like complain about Primaris, but I don't know. They're fast and easy to paint. And I enjoy them, and that's cool. But I've got some of the. Have you heard of Villainy Inks?
Yeah,
you know, the stuff from Grimdark Compendium. Mm-hmm. I backed their crowdfund thing last year, and they showed up like 2-3 weeks ago.
Okay, so in people's hands. Oh, now? Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah.
He's been doing production now and everything. And because what was cool about that thing was he did a crowdfund, not necessarily Kickstarter, but a homegrown crowdfund. And it wasn't so that he could get the bottles produced and then manufactured and sent off to people and then thank you very much. It was to buy the equipment so that he could start producing and bottling and labeling and doing that all himself. And now he's turned it into a business. And that's, I think, a lot cooler than just like, is one and done, dump it, you know, Kickstarter
using
thing.
The money just to fund something and then move on.
Right.
Or
but I really
to
can't
establish
wait.
A company.
Exactly. Someday, I can't wait to get home and mess with them. I've got a couple of projects that I want to work on and I want to mess with them because I've done, you know, the normal streaking grime that a lot of people do.
Yeah.
These are a very different animal from what I understand.
Okay, that's like, cool.
You're supposed to thin them right from the get. You don't put them on straight out of the bottle like you usually do with streaking grime when you just like slop it on and then start wiping it away. This is kind of a different vibe. And I've been watching some of those videos and they've been really cool.
Is it still like an enamel type product?
It is, from what I understand, still an enamel wash, but it has been thinned down. Or I'm sorry, it's
Very like, concentrated.
It's concentrated because I posted pictures on Instagram of like, oh, I got this stuff finally in the mail because the packaging is kind of nice looking and stuff. And I'm not usually impressed by packaging, but I'm like, it's nice. And then he commented in the thing.
That's
he was
cool.
Like, make sure you thin it, you know, and stuff. And it's in the videos, but it's one of those things where it should be on the bottle somewhere. Like, make sure you thin this, you know. But
yeah, well, that's exciting.
Well, I feel it's also, again, another thing that's. It's another excuse to like explore a new product, a new type of way of painting or approaching something.
Right.
Like, and I think that is neat. It gives you a whole range of things you can do, and you might sort of stumble into something you didn't realize was a means you could go about a thing. And
oh yeah, I mean, I've talked about that type of painting on my channel. I did this. I had some sort of space dwarf. It wasn't a GW one. It was some 3D printed one.
Yeah,
and it was just like just flat block. You know, like. Pale pink for the skin and blue for the shirt and green for the pants and silver and gold and blah, blah, blah. And then it was just slopping on like MIG or ammo by MIG or whatever, you know, the streaking grime and letting it sit for about 20 minutes and just starting to wipe it away with an old t-shirt. And I made a video about that and people were like, I've never even thought about doing anything like that. And I'm like, it's so fast and it can give you a look.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great for elven princesses necessarily. You know what I mean? Like if that's what you're trying to do, or super clean robots who are just brand new off of the
assembly
factory
line.
Floor.
Yeah, maybe not.
But if you're looking for something that's kind of grimy, you can paint that stuff so quick and still make it look really cool or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, that's what I like to try to expose people to different types of things as far as like I'll talk about GW stuff because it's the big thing that everybody knows about when they're getting into the hobby. Like the point of the YouTube channel is to get new players into the hobby.
Yeah.
And so I'm always doing everything from the lens of like I'm trying to talk to new players on how to get them into the hobby.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're going to have to talk about Games Workshop because they're the biggest, you know, 800-pound gorilla in the hobby, and it makes sense. But then I like to sneak in stuff in there about Forbidden Psalm or Space Weirdos or, mm-hmm. like, you know, whatever, or weird painting techniques or talking about Turnip 28 and that kind of stuff.
No, yeah, and I think that's good.
Yeah.
You know, almost like, again, as sort of we alluded to before, giving people permission to, like, do their own thing with, like, any one of the things they got into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I think is good.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Is there any, like, indie sort of game that you're particularly excited about, perhaps saw here at Adepticon, or just are excited to try?
Gosh, like, the one that I love playing these days is, I mentioned it just a second ago, is Space Weirdos.
Yeah.
It's by Garsky Games. It's pretty much a one-man show. I know he, like, the cover is done by a guy whose name is Lucas, I think. He's from Poland, and I can't think of his last name. But he does, it's very, very iconic. Like, you definitely, like, if you see any other piece of artwork that he does, you're like, oh, I
You'll know.
That. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. good.
And so he's very cool. Or that game is really cool because it's just... It's 16 pages. It's a little, you know, 5.5 by 8.5 zine.
Okay.
And
yeah.
It's black and white and very simple. You're not having like factions and forces and lore.
Yeah.
It is literally just like you're going to, you know, you've got a guy who's got a rocket launcher model and you're like, okay, well, you know, we decided his speed is going to be this and that costs this many points and a rocket launcher costs this many points. And you build each unit, mm-hmm. each model that way and then come up with your force. And it plays like in a 2x2 if you play with a 75-point force, but it plays in a 3x3 if you want to go 125. So there's just all this variability and all of this kind of freedom to it in this little 16-page book, which is a lot of fun.
That's nice.
I did pick up – one of the few things I bought so far is I picked up I bought this game before Adepticon. I bought it online and had it shipped and everything, and it's a two-player starter for this game called Blackout.
Okay.
Which is like this kind of like, it seems like a military tactical type thing, but it's sci-fi, so I'm not like worried about it being, oh, the, you know, the Marines are fighting against the insurgents again. You know what I mean? It's like on a different planet.
And it's
like,
yeah, it's, yeah. Yeah.
But it's got that fair. Vibe a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's also got a little bit of Titanfall, you know, the video mm-hmm. game.
Yeah.
A little bit of that vibe where like these mechs can kind of drop in if you do like a certain thing during the scenario at a certain time. And then when you drop in yours, then it unlocks it for the other guy. And then it becomes
Sounds fun.
So that's kind of neat. I picked up a couple of the mechs because I already had the two-player starter. And then probably the last thing is I'm looking forward to getting home and trying out Flames of Orion.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can use those mechs in Flames of Orion.
Yeah, Steve gave me a copy on, oh gosh, Wednesday, I want to say?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's a fun game.
Yeah.
And you know, like a lot of these sort of miniature agnostic games, like it's fun that you have some mech models or something.
Oh, sure.
And can play, use them, and maybe you can use them with in Berserker Works Mech 28 too.
Absolutely.
And like all that is kind of fun. See different game design philosophies and
I'm find just, one that suits you.
When I'm painting on Twitch and I'm painting something weird or whatever, I constantly get people who are like, "Well, what game is that for?" And I'm like,
"Whatever you want." Yeah.
Like, I was just painting some Kitbashed. Well, no, not the Kitbashed ones. Those actually are coming next. But I was just painting some regular Stargrave minis, the Stargrave plastics, and they're awesome. But it's constantly people, you know, who hop into the channel and are not necessarily they haven't probably watched my stuff before or whatever. Mm-hmm. They come in and they're like, "Is that a?" What is it? Is that an Imperial Guardsman? I'm like, no, it's just like, well, what are you going to use it for? I'm like, oh, I could use it for this game. I could use it for that game. I can bop around.
Not particularly.
And it's not, I feel like sometimes Games Workshop is definitely like fostering the idea that you need to get into an ecosystem and this model is for this game. And that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to tell people it's not. It's not how it works.
It doesn't have to be exactly. Apple and their iPhone walled garden type sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I feel that's, that's nice, and it kind of a similar way for I know some of like Ink 28 and mm-hmm. that type of stuff. There's a similar thing that people are like, well, what are the rules for this? Like, there's such a focus on, and like, it doesn't really matter.
Right,
like, anything that like you're familiar with, you can use and kind of shift it to fit whatever you're doing.
Yeah,
and it's more a focus on who you're with, having a good time, and enjoying that moment. And I feel a lot of times, if you're really into some of this converting and stuff, like you might not play any of these games. It's like you're probably not playing any of these games. Like, oh, I play it every week for the next two years.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not that concerned about needing to like know these rules like the back of my hand.
Exactly.
Like, I'm not that concerned. I want to get the flavor and feel of this.
And I'm not looking for a game that's that dense either.
Like, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to be like only playing Warhammer for like the next 3 years until they come up with another Warhammer, then you better be having a lot of things to chew on in that big, thick book. But when you're like, I want to play this once in a while with my friends and pick it up and then set it down and not play it again for 6 months and then play it again, having a much thinner, easier, more digestible rule set makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, because I feel like stuff with like 40K or whatever, like maybe I play one game and then the next time I consider doing it, it's like, oh, it's two editions from now.
Right,
and
you
like,
know, or
I don't,
also all the
how
points,
did that happen?
All the points have changed or whatever. And it, yeah, no, the churn that they have kind of, I think, backed themselves into is, God, I don't envy them. I really don't.
No, and like how the development cycle is, like, it still has to take a long time to produce, print these books, make them.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, it's like an impossibility to balance them. Whereas I feel with a lot of these more indie designs, like, it's just, that isn't a huge concern.
No.
You know, the people going into it are not intentionally trying to break stuff and make
right.
it unfun for the other person.
When
it
it's
is
not
more
so,
about
when
that.
It's not so competitive, then it's a lot easier, I think, to get to make things that are like not perfectly balanced, but they still come off as really fun, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
agreed.
The tanks thing we did last night is really balanced because basically everyone's got the same tank.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like there's not really much there that you can be like, well, you know. It's yeah. There's very little change to it in that fashion.
Mm-hmm. And then that's nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to chat
absolutely.
With us.
It's absolutely
always fun to talk about the hobby. And
yeah, yeah.
Hear your perspective on things, and excited to see your next game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to people getting it in people's hands too. It's coming out in a couple of months, and then we'll start working on the next one. And
yeah,
we just keep churning it.
That's the spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, yeah, well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Enjoy the rest of Adepticon. All right, everybody. War Saturday, Adepticon 2024. I'm Greg, and I'm here with Grant, Underworld Alliance.
Hello, Greg.
Hi, Grant. How are you doing?
I'm pretty wonderful. How are you hanging?
I'm living the dream, I guess. I'm glad we're recording some stuff again. We brought all this stuff to record, and with all of the hustle and bustle of things going on, it was maybe hard to find the time or find the space to like set the stuff up, but we're doing it now. So how are you doing? I had talked to you a little bit yesterday, and this is your first Adepticon. It's my first Adepticon as well.
I've never been to Adepticon before. Mike was here at least last year. I don't know about years prior, but came up with Mike and Martin.
Hell yeah.
It was a nice solid drive.
Or how long of it, like 12 hours, 14 hours, how long?
It was probably in that nice 14-hour range.
Yeah, so that's pretty long drive.
Yeah.
I considered driving myself from Pennsylvania. It would probably be like 12-ish hours. But then ultimately decided to take a plane.
I think that's a smarter move.
It was only a two-hour flight, so it was pretty short. But I don't know. The turbulence was pretty bad. I felt miserable.
The turbulence was pretty trash on the drive, too.
Okay, well. It was 14 hours long.
Being in control of the wind was
pretty
fun.
Yeah.
We were truly sailing.
Yeah, well, for me, like, the ascent and then the descent, like, I was just struggling not to vomit. Like, I mean, I haven't flown that much, but it's never... I've never felt that badly.
That's fair. I'm always scared to fly with any sort of paint or anything
Any
inks that could just pop.
Yeah, so... Oh, yeah, we didn't bring any paint. That and afraid that, or I guess all of our stuff we did carry on, so we didn't check anything, and I don't really want people to be rummaging through all of our stuff if we can help it.
For sure.
Well, so what are you most excited about, Adepticon? I see you have a Mordheim Kislev warband you just have been working on.
Yeah, I didn't allocate time prior to Adepticon into the best ways for the hobby. Life always kind of takes over.
Yeah,
with
I hear
work
you.
Or anything like that. But still brought enough stuff with me that while Mike was finishing a display for Moss Karen, just kind of powered through with him and sculpted some pants on his Kingdom Death ladies and painted them up on the same day. So
also, I think it's cool to see some Kingdom Death models co-opted to use for other things. And these were some of the plastic kits, right?
Yeah, actually, I think all the Kingdom Death bits are the plastic ones, whether it's like two of the Cossacks or the old White Lion ones, and then most of the others are kind of, or most of the heroes are kind of like a co-opted one of their singleton or signature minis or something from the Gambler's Chest. And I don't know, that game's just becoming a lot of homework in order to play it.
Okay, yeah.
It for the better, but it just becomes a little daunting to do the prep work, the setup, to show everyone how to play for the first time, and just really happy to be miniature agnostic and try to not give a hoot about who makes it and just be like, yeah, I think it looks cool.
Well, so you with the Kingdom Death, the Gambler's Chest stuff, so you've played a bunch of that?
I haven't played any of it, honestly. Okay. Been close to, and was feeling under the weather, so needed to cancel on the first session kind of a thing. Yeah. But even just like reading that book prior, there's just a lot. It's gotten crunchier.
Okay.
It was already a pretty crunchy game.
Yes. I mean, Eric and I had played it, or the original Kingdom Death, when it was finally released. And I don't know, how long ago was that? 6 years ago, seven?
What, like 20, maybe 2016-ish was...
That sounds
around then. And when it came out, Mike Gundam Fischl and Scott, our friend Portnight, we played for like months straight. Never have I had a continuous any kind of a game, campaign, whatever, go on as well as the first iteration of Kingdom Death.
Wow. Because Eric and I played quite a few sessions of it, but he was in Baltimore and I was in central Pennsylvania, so every time we would want to play it, it would be like a 2-hour drive to get down there. But even still, we played more of it than I expected we would have.
It was nice once you got into the swing of it. You felt like you could get through 3 to 4 years in a really long session kind of a thing. Like 2 to 3 is way more likely.
Yeah,
unless it's like a boss narrative comes through or something. But
when the thing with it, like, or the thing that I liked the best was all the cool, creepy monsters and such.
For sure.
Though, the amount of time it took Eric just to assemble all of them, like,
I mean, they're kind of daunting. They're not like your GW that's giving you part numbers and A goes to B and B goes to C and all this. It's just like a good luck. But
well,
that's
part
of the fun, too.
I wonder, for some of their newer kits, have they changed that to try to help with the assembly? I would guess they've had some people complain about that.
I don't think it has, like, this part goes, or, like, numbered or anything, but I think there's, like, some online resources, or just any time that I'm building them, I just look up the image or, like, the narrative model. Just so visualize it without, because I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah. So your Kislev Warband using some of these are the White Lion Kingdom Death, or I don't even remember.
Mostly the White Lion sets, and then some of the, and then like Youngbloods, I just used some of the less armored ones, giving them some knives and stuff. They get weapons later on.
I had thought when the Kingdom Death stuff was finally released that a lot of the multi-part plastic stuff wasn't quite as good as a lot of the other, like, Kingdom Death stuff. And some of that is, if they're trying to make a kit that you can assemble all sorts of different ways, you're never going to be able to quite get the nice, natural-looking poses quite as much.
Yeah.
Which, And I think that was also a thing. GW used to do more multi-part kit stuff where you could put it in whatever poses you want, but it feels like they're moving away from that.
Everyone's kind of telling you how your models are supposed to look, and this is how it's supposed to be built. And at that point, you get, like, some nicer force details, while, like, the OG multi-part plastic has some pretty killer pieces and stuff, and so does the Gambler's Chest, too. And I'm also just not scared to chop that up and put it on a range or a mini that it's quote-unquote not supposed to go to. Those are just some mental rules.
Yeah, I feel you've done enough hobbying and stuff that you're not afraid of doing that, but certainly when
I think that's how I started.
Oh, well, okay, because when the three of us started, when we were like 12, the notion of doing any two wild conversions was not something that we were doing.
That was like all the White Dwarf was about, and they had the bits catalog that like accentuated, like, I just want 10 of these arms for this regiment to unify them and stuff.
That was cool when they used to sell all of those parts, and they had the big bits catalogs, and they'd sell it all.
That was the coolest catalog of all time, I think. But
which I guess now that almost all their stuff is plastic, like, they couldn't even really do it. And they certainly don't want to start selling the individual sprues or something, because they want you to buy
the whole box. And then the upgrade kit with these different arms. And Just separate everything so you can't. But I don't know. Just buy the fun kits that you're like, oh, I could use these bits and this and have a range.
I mean, what the three of us do, we just buy kits that we think could be used for something, and then I feel often they just sit unused in the box. Or maybe Adam will take and use one hand or something from the kit and then nothing else.
That's fair. Yeah. If I'm in the mood for buying kits, I'm like trying to be like, let's get two, and I'm going to smash this one with this one. So at least I'm using half of what I've.
Oh yeah, it would
what I'm
be
doing
better. Or since the kits are so expensive now, it's probably better to actually have a solid idea of what you think you want to use for the thing.
For sure,
because they're too expensive to.
It's for sure a lot more homework before spending your money when you're like, do I really need these bits, while getting ooh shinied from everything new and just needing to settle down and tell yourself you don't need this. You got enough plastic and metal stuff. You can smash.
I guess
smash
at this point
together.
It's never a question of need anymore.
Yeah.
Never a question of need. What are you hoping to do with the rest of Adepticon? Do you have presumably try to at least play a game of Mordheim with your Kislev warband?
I have to play at least one game. I put some M&Ms on a mini that I finger painted to put into this meat grinder. If that's what I want to do tonight, I don't really know. I don't have too many plans.
Yeah, so the meat grinder thing last night, I guess for listeners who might not be familiar with it, for the past couple years, I don't remember the name of the group, has brought a meat grinder and set up kind of an arena combat game where you put each person puts in a model and the loser gets ground up in the meat grinder, so you're actually destroying the model that you put in. And last year, it made quite the stir, and I think a lot of people from the Grimdark Hallway getting really excited about it has led to even more popularity with it this year, because it was, they shut it down early last night because people were being loud.
I think the hotel told them a hard cutoff time instead of just letting it ride for as long as it could, and with each of the two previous games being over an hour long for 10 people, it's understandable for them to say, hey, we're going to cut it short tonight, but open it up today.
Yeah, I think it's being open today at 6 maybe,
or so.
I heard. Okay, so hopefully giving people more time to destroy the models that they may have just created today or yesterday.
If that doesn't work out, then either just attempt to play a game of Mordheim or Vestarion, or just
hell yeah,
just relax, kinda, and just have fun with the friends within the community that I've connected and made, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I'm most excited about is seeing and talking to friends and stuff and making new friends.
Yeah, and just happy to see any of the projects that people have worked on, whether they did it specifically for this or they're just like, this is how I spend my time.
Yeah.
And seeing it in person is always better than the tiny little phone screen.
Like, that's right.
Tactility is important.
Yeah. Well, I guess perhaps we can call this a close and give you the opportunity to hopefully actually go and play one
yeah.
of those games.
I'm a find some freaks and
hell yeah.
roll some dice.
All right, thanks a lot, Grant.
Absolutely. Thank
Have
you,
fun. Hey, everybody, we're back. Adepticon Saturday, I guess Adepticon 2024. It's Greg, and I'm here with Trent Miscast
Hello.
And Bill Berserkerworks.
Hello.
Glad to have you all here. So
Thank
how's
you.
Adepticon been thus far? It's a lot busier today than at least it was yesterday, I would say.
It's very busy today.
It's bloody nuts.
Yeah, we've been watching people do circles in the parking lot, trying to negotiate with people who are coming out so they can take their spots.
It's just waves of people carrying gigantic models. It's kind of everything you ever want, right?
Well, yeah, when we I guess didn't get here as early as we wanted to today, and you're just trying to find a place to park was wild.
Yeah. You managed because we were following you in.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, we parked in a place that was originally for tractor trailer trucks.
Yeah,
yeah,
we walk through that spot every day. Yeah.
Okay, well, now
a lot of squirrels here. That's a new experience.
Squirrels? No squirrels in.
Nah.
No squirrels in Australia.
No squirrels.
And also the snow's new.
Yeah, okay. It's your Trent's second snow ever.
I'm off-roading.
He got a snowman yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was enough snow to make a snowman.
It was kind of dirty, but they just said this is what all snowmen look like.
Trent has to believe them too. He doesn't have a lot of references for snowmen.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. So I guess, Bill, so you made a game, Mech 28. How long has that been brewing in your head? And
I think
the first time it's been, like, played in any big sense? Or
I think it's the first time it's been played in public. Because I think I started working on it in the fall. And Trent's been helping me with that, too. He did some of the early playtesting.
What was the inspiration for doing this Mech 28 game?
I don't know if anybody plays Titanfall 2 still, but
Titanfall 2,
it's one of my favorite games. And when the game was getting DDoS attacked and nobody could play and North Star wasn't a thing yet, I always liked mechs, so I kind of wanted to build a big mech in that style.
I bought the original Titanfall and played it for about 45 minutes and thought it was cool and then never returned. But a thing about Titanfall is you can get out of those mechs, and so presumably in Mech 28, it's not always in the mechs. Is that that been scrapped?
That's been scrapped. So there was early rules in the beginning to be able to get out of the mechs, and I was trying to figure out, like, oh man, do I figure out, like, parkour mechanics and stuff like that?
Okay, yeah.
But then it was, the other idea behind the game was to be able to just have, like, a really nice, easy rule set to play with kit bashes, because all of my friends build kit bashes, and not all of them build robots, they build monsters and creatures and stuff.
Yeah, so one of the cool things I saw, a bunch of you had made, taken some Bandai Pokemon plastic kits and turned them into mechs, which I particularly like that. And Trent, you have a cool Gengar.
Yeah. Right? All resin cast, glows in the dark, and it's just like the cheapest model that you can buy at like the hobby shops at the moment.
And
so
it has your girlfriend's tongue on it, right?
Yeah, which, you know,
which is
I
the
like
whole
talking
story.
About.
Yeah. Except that it's in a video.
Yeah, my tongue was too big, and I spent a good morning just trying to cast my tongue over and over and over again to try to get it to fit in the Gengar. And then I think my girlfriend felt a bit bad for me, so she...
Well, so the notion of casting your tongue, how unpleasant is that?
Oh, it's kind of... Yeah. Well, you can't move anything. Like, your body is sort of just locked in there. So I just asked people to keep me company for 15 minutes.
Okay, so
in each interval. Okay. But they just spent the whole time laughing at me instead. So kind of a nightmare situation. I can't escape. And everyone's just laughing at me, and I don't know why. Because I can't see anything.
Well, I mean, I saw the model the other day. I think it turned out pretty well.
Thank you very much.
Made really cool models for it.
Have you gotten the chance to play Mech 28 with the Pokemon mechs yet?
Not yet.
That's the day.
We tried. We tried the night when we were chatting with you guys. But then it got late, so we and just called it.
Well, it was more like Pokemon on parade.
Yeah, wasn't we called it? That the armies on parade.
Yeah. But it was also like, you know, we'd been making all these things in like a group chat. So it's like everyone's seeing the work in progress of what everyone's doing. So I think half of it was just like, you know, like those group chats, it's like it's 1% Pokemon and then 99% just hanging out and talking garbage. Yeah. And, you know, that's basically what we did once we all met up. It's like, here's the Pokemon. Oh, okay, cool. How you been?
It was good.
And so last night I saw that you play, I believe it was Mech 28, but with Lart, like the one weird Baba Yaga's house-legged thing and your big toad creature.
Yeah.
How did that go? And I guess presumably that was played at a larger scale than what Mech 28 was designed for, or perhaps it doesn't matter that much.
Well, you can tell the story of that one, because you and Al had a thing that you started together.
Yeah, well, I met Elle Graves. You'll find her on Instagram. She's a fantastic sculptor and stuff, but she makes just bigger things, but loves miniatures and has Warhammer and stuff. So, like, making a big model seemed like a cool thing to do together. And then fight them. And then we were like, how do we do this? And it's like Mech 28, the rules are so good and it's designed for large models anyway. But also the movement in Mech 28 is so fast. You're like across the board if you want to be. So it's like you can just have that scale as like the fast speed. So we didn't change any rules. And we used you as be like, instead of us picking our weapons or whatever, it's like, take our mechs and tell us, like, what it looks like we should have, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I did with, like, Al, right? Like, what does your walking chapel on spindly legs do? And, like, what's the aesthetic of it? And then we kind of pick some of the, like, the specials and the abilities and things like that and the weapons to go with that. And then the same with Trent's. And then, we tried it. Like, the game isn't designed for kind of one model each with two players. It still works. You just leave out certain parts of initiative and things like that. But, and then you can, because it's such a light rule system, if anything comes up, you just make it up.
But we talked about it. Elle and I were like, oh man, we should really do this next year, but we should try to incorporate like a human scale model as well to yeah, drive like it and dismount and, you know, run around really and cool.
To be just like Titanfall.
Yes.
Full circle.
Except it's not parkour pilots, it's mages with walking chapels.
Hell yeah.
But I think, you know, for a game that the barrier of entry for like a fun, replayable game where it's like the outcome is based on skill and you only need two models is really, really great. You know, and if we had time, we'd have made two giant things, but we're like, we were working on them like right before I flew out. So,
It's funny. The first public game of Mech 28 hasn't had any mechs in it. hasn't been following the rules.
It's just such a hackable set.
And the Pokemon game, like that one isn't going to be as, you know, rules as written. It's going to be a bit different too, because we're going to have about nine players or something, each with one model, and we'll see how it works. Yeah. It's going to be more of a battle royale. But
everyone I've play tested it with is like, oh man, like I've got all these ideas of like things you could do with this rule set, or, you know, and like that's sort of what's exciting to me about it, is it's such a good scaffold. And it's just fun by itself.
It's a pretty simple rule set. Like, it's nothing, I don't think it's anything groundbreaking. I just kind of tried to put, you know, a little spin of like old video games and stuff like that in it, right? Like, it's got a little bit of an Overwatch, or a little bit of like a Quake or Unreal Tournament or something like that in it. So,
Also,
I guess for the listeners, where can they find it? Do you have it up on
itch, one of those places? It's just a free game. It's just a text file.
Hell yeah.
It's still kind of, like, I'm still developing it a bit, so there'll be updates on it. But yeah, there's Berserkerworks on itch, or you can just, I think it shows up now if you just Google Mech 28. And it's M-E-K.
So successful. You've really made it.
Well, Trent's helped a lot with that. So
yeah. I'm just excited about it. It's just so fun because, you know, I think skirmish games are the future. Well, that's what I thought until I was like, oh, I can play a game with just two models and it's sick. So.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I have liked about skirmish games is just you don't need to make a whole army. And you can maybe focus more on having some interesting and unique characters as opposed to, I need to make five squads of infantry and some vehicles.
Yeah.
And feel.
But, you know, like, it's also a really good club game, too, because you can bring it to your local club, and it's like, if someone just has, like, a massive Carnifex or something, it's like, all those stats and stuff, the mech creation system, it just...
Yeah.
Trees down so you can make exactly what you want to make and get everyone involved. Yes. It took us like 5 minutes less.
Oh yeah. It's meant to be really kind of straightforward and fast so that
bloody nailed it.
So that thanks, Trent. So that if you have, because one of the other things too is like I like hobby stuff and I like watching scratch building stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
Like Bill Making Stuff's videos and Scratch Bash and like all those other guys who just make interesting things. And it was one of the other ideas behind the game was, well, what if there was like a light rule set where you could just take that and play a game with your friends, right? You know, because we can all, like, making stuff out of garbage is a pretty low entry barrier for stuff, especially compared to Warhammer, right?
Yeah, certainly.
I think if you've got a game where somebody can play with the thing that's made out of beads and spray bottles and, you know, pipe cleaners against their, like, $100... Space Marine Dreadnought. I don't know. I like that idea that you can kind of just play with anything. So
yeah, and I like the notion, Trent, how you said probably anybody at your local gaming club has a model that they could use that could represent something in the game. So
yeah,
you don't even necessarily have to make new stuff for it, even if that's one of the fun aspects that you can engage with it.
And making big models is fun. Like because the scale for the game is about 4 inches tall, you know, give or take. It's not that big of a deal. But like making a 4-inch tall scratch built robot or a kit bash robot out of whatever you have, right? And you know, because I think it's a fair assumption that we all like making some models, but we don't want to spend a ton of time, like you said, building massive units and armies. So like the time that you would take to build five cool guys for Mordheim or something, you put that into building one big robot, and it's so much fun. Like I've really enjoyed just the hobby project of that.
Yeah, that's great. No, I really like the idea of taking those inexpensive Pokemon plastic Bandai kits and doing something with them. Because, like, I have bought a number in the past that are just sitting in a closet somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
So the notion of turning them into a cool, weird mech, really fun.
Yeah, like, mine is, you can get them on sale for $5, and then I used a $2 action figure from the dollar store for a rocket launcher and just put that together. I don't have anything in my Warhammer collection that's that cheap and that big.
Well, and I think even like for retail price for them, they're maybe $15, so they're not even very expensive, even if you don't get them on sale, which is probably they're trying to get young kids into Gunpla or building plastic model kits, so like they know, or Bandai knows, that parents aren't going to be shelling out $35 for a multi-part Pokemon kit, but they could pay $12.
Oh, and they're great kits too. Like, I mean,
they're really good. Yeah.
Like Gundam stuff getting into the Gundam kits was the first time. The first time I got into them was when I started building the mechs for this game. And I bought, you know, like $230 mech kits and the Pokemons and stuff like that. And then I kind of realized, oh man, these kits are really good.
Well, yeah, the level of technology and work that Bandai has put into making these kits over the years, different injection molded plastics, where different color plastics on the same sprue.
Oh, yeah.
And
There's like layers of, ones too. That are
the
like
amount of nice stuff they have in like a $30 kit. Like if that was a Games Workshop kit, it would be like $100.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah. Mm. I mean, even just the frames of the sprues are great. Like I've kept those for parts.
They also come with a bunch of extra bits because they all have like facial expressions and stuff. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all sorts of little hands.
Yeah, I found so many cool things in the Gundam community when I was looking up mech stuff. Like, yeah, like you said, like you can buy individual hands and heads. Like I bought that wind up Gatling gun. Like it's just nuts.
And your official quotations models, they're all like Lego joints and stuff, so they're all posable and things.
Lego was the other thing, like adding Gundam kits and Lego pieces. I know Lego is a contentious subject for some people, but I really don't care because there's 30 cents of Lego on the mechs and there's $70 worth of resin kits and like $30 worth of Games Workshop bits on there. So I don't understand why Lego's precious.
Well, I appreciate that you're referring to it as Lego. Lego's the brand name. Or Lego bricks. You're not putting together Legos. So good work. I'm proud of you.
A lot of the stuff too, like you can get a lot of the knockoff Lego stuff too, right? And they're good too. Like there's just certain bits I found that Lego is better for, and I'm not precious about it at all. It's all plastic in the end, and it looks the same when you paint it. So
there's something so underrated about miniatures you can pose. I'm so excited every time I get to use your miniatures because they're different every time.
Yeah, you can pose the arms because I built it so that they're customizable, right? So instead of we've been doing magnets in the hobby for years, and we always put the magnets on wrong and everything like that too. So I thought, like, I was looking at Legos and action figures and stuff, and thought, well, like the what I can't remember the name of the company now. 3M, they used to do like the Ashley Wood action figures and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's World or Tomorrow's Kings.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love the style and aesthetic of those. And so I thought, well, maybe I can do something with that. Like, oh, and they're posable action figures. Well, what parts can I use to make posable action figures? Lego.
Yeah, well, those Ashley Wood posable figures, they probably weren't cheap, were they?
Oh, no. And they're out of production, too. Yeah. Like, they're hundreds of dollars for those kits.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, you could use them to play Mech 28, I guess.
But, yeah, you certainly could.
But that was, like, I always loved the aesthetic of it. And then, the immediate answer was kind of Lego.
Yeah.
Like, I bought some of the, they're like these little cheap Marvel Crisis suits or something like that for Lego figures. Like, you can put the little Lego dude in the Wolverine suit.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, there might be some cool parts. And, oh, no, there's ball joints. Like, this is the answer. And then it was, next stop was like Bricklink, and found out you can buy individual like
whatever piece you
whatever
want.
You want, and it's like 2 cents, 3 cents, you know, rather than
buying a whole $30 kit to get some joints.
It's like the fact that I bought two Killican kits for all the arms and only the arms.
You know what was crazy? The when we played the game and how it ended too. So good narratively.
Yeah.
So I sculpted, I scare my face to put on my model, and obviously I put a massive ass on the back of it.
Oh,
yeah. And Elle's Walking House had a great pair of hands, and she outpaced me, ran behind me, slapped my ass to death, immobilized me, and then threw a red gas canister at my model in just the right way that it knocked me back into my own vomit and I died.
Incredible. Yeah. Yeah, and only a little bit of that was kind of like ruled in. And she did it perfectly because she took advantage of the fact that the models were so big that the exploding range for the barrels wouldn't hit her because the models are just so big. So it just knocked Trent back into his own special effect.
You know, it still felt pretty good to lose.
It's a fun story, but win or lose doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I think that's fun with like a lot of the light rules games that have been coming out in the community and stuff like that, where it's like you know you don't have everything nailed out perfectly, and that we're all this kind of people that we can come up with a cool story to fill the gap. Instead, we don't need to call a judge over and hammer it out. You know,
we're less worried about a competitive gaming experience and more telling a narrative
interesting story.
Like, one of my favorite games has been Gaslands, and like Gaslands just has a rule right in there where it's like, if you don't know what the rules are, just do the thing that's going to cause the most destruction.
Yeah,
and I love that rule. So,
that's what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, so I wanted to kind of bring that into Mech 28 too, right? Where it's like, oh, it's like there's a rule in there for destructible terrain, and the rule is if anything's painted red, it's explosive.
Hell yeah.
You know, so it's like, we all know that everything painted red is explosive.
Yeah, and it probably goes faster too, at least for the orcs. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that was like the other thing was making it fast. Like we've done playtest games that lasted 15 minutes, and it's
and they feel fun. Like real games. Yeah. So
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's impressive to have a game that feels like a satisfying experience, mm-hmm. but still be quick.
Yeah. Because the thing I always like with video games, for instance, right? Like, I grew up playing like Unreal Tournament and the Quake games and stuff like that, and like deathmatch shooters and stuff. And I've never been good at them.
I'm not good at them either.
I always appreciated the fact that it's, oh, I jump in, I get shot, I die, I respawn, I run up, maybe I can shoot a dude and then I'll get killed and then respawn. And then, like, these days, it always seems to be about, like, extraction shooters and, you know...
Like Call of Duty sort of stuff.
Yeah, like PUBG, where it's, you got to play for 50 minutes, get killed by somebody better than you, wait 10 minutes for the rest of your team.
Not very fun.
No. And I... just games in general these days, so... But, like, that's why that's why I'm so happy that this game is so fast and easy to play, and you can just... Oh, it only took 50 minutes? Well, let's just do another one.
Can just play it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah, so I kind of like that idea of just going, you know, not slogging into a... Like, the last time I played 40K, it took, like, 6 hours to play a game.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I don't have the patience or the willpower for that, I don't think.
No, and so I'd rather, like, that was the idea with this game, where it's like, oh, I'm going to... The mechs are fast enough to build that, you know, if your game only takes 15 minutes or 20 minutes, well, just build another one and just change out your weapon, just like you would in a video game or something like that.
Yeah.
Like a Titanfall again for, you know, that game is just, it's one of the only games in recent history that you've been able to just quickly play. And I don't get mad if I suck at it.
I feel a lot of my experience with newer first person shooter competitive things is you spawn in, you're dead immediately, and it's frustrating.
Yeah. And so many of these, like, video games now, it's like you're working to try to build something up, and then when you die, you lose all your gear and stuff. It's like, well, that's no fun for me. Like,
yeah.
I'm older now. I don't have patience for that.
Yeah.
I know we all kind of grew up playing video games where it's like, oh, you put in the cartridge, you start playing the game, and, like, you don't do anything for an hour because you're going to lose that save when you turn off the Super Nintendo, right?
Yeah.
Like,
it's... Yeah, hell let loose. Like, I actually bought that on Steam. It's like a World War II shooter. But I think they're trying more for realism. So
that's a different kind of game.
It's less about wild excitement all the time.
Yeah. And that's like the difference between like multiplayer and first person stuff, right? I love RPGs and immersive first persons, but for me it's always, if I'm gonna play with other people, I wanna have fun.
Yeah.
Like, I want that fun like right away, and I want it to keep going, right?
Yeah.
Like why is certainly. It that like we had a LAN party a few years ago and we had all these games on our Steam accounts, and then we like tried to see if we could download Unreal Tournament 2004 instead. And that game was 20 years old. But yeah, no, that was kind of one of the ideas with it, was just to have like...
Well, Unreal Tournament or Quake 3, which was your favorite?
Unreal Tournament.
They were both released at like the same time.
Unreal Tournament. So growing up, I never had a very good computer.
Yeah.
So Unreal Tournament was the only one I could play, and I had to play it on a windowed... like the window was... what the P would be now, like, or the resolution.
It was just
ridiculous. Like, I had a little window open that was about a quarter of the size of my CRT monitor, and I couldn't use certain weapons because it would crash my computer, and that's how I played it for years until I bought my own computer. But and then it was, the rest of the Unreal series and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
That's great.
I always enjoyed it. They had such a good mod community, and, like, I just thought it was so awesome that, like, Cliffy B, one of the developers, had his own site hosting people's mods and people's maps for the game, and
that's cool. Like, it was very much encouraged to do that.
Yeah, and I love that. And then, like, Yeah, and then like I got into Counter-Strike and stuff like that.
I feel like we
could
say that like the aspect of the miniature gaming hobby is similar in the sense that everybody's encouraging one another to just do whatever you want and think is cool, or at least this side of it. Maybe not Games Workshop as a whole are super encouraging of that.
I think this community is really good for that, because I know that since like getting to know like all of you guys and the Grimdark guys and all the Nemo guys and stuff like that, like Gage and I bonded instantly, because it's like we both played a really stupidly obscure Counter-Strike mod in like 2003, and he's that's like the great. Only person I've ever met in my life who's also played it.
That mod,
and it's like, well, that's it makes sense, like you know, you kind of it makes sense for the community and the kind of people that we all are, right?
That
we'd have something like that in common.
Well, I guess we've been talking now for 25 minutes. I can probably let both of you out and about to go talk to other people, but I very much appreciate your time talking about Mech 28 and the cool creations you're making, whether it be with your own tongue or Bandai Model Kit.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been great.
Yep, talk to y'all later.
All right.
All right, everybody, we're back. Saturday, Adepticon 2024. I almost said Mordheim, but it's not Mordheim. So I'm here with Alex of AV Hobbies and Mark Mosh Arts. When I met the two of you initially, it was at Bill Ford's Mordheim event.
Exactly.
So it's really fun to be back together with both of you at Adepticon. And Mark, you're coming all the way from Germany, so that's quite the trip.
That's right. But I'm here, and totally worth it.
Heck yeah. So, how have you been? What's been some of the highlights or something pretty interesting? What?
Being honest with you, I was mostly hyped to meet all of you guys here again. Yeah, like seeing Alex again after how many years? 1.5 years or so?
No, it's more than that, right? Math was never my strong suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
2022, it's 2024 now, but yeah, so it's you're right. It's closer to like 1.5 than it is to 2, but it's weird. We've been reminiscing about it like all week, because in some ways it doesn't feel like it's been that long, and then other ways it feels like it's been really like a long time. Like Mark has a little one now, so
yeah. 8 months on the road, and when I got to Texas, he was only inside the belly, so I just got to know it prior to going to Texas.
Yeah. But yeah, I would say the same. It feels like not too long ago, but then I guess when I think about maybe some of the things that have happened since that time, maybe it does feel like it's been a little while as well.
Yeah. But that's the cool thing about our hobby, is that you can spend the time apart from these people and then you get back together with them, and then you're just kicking it, and it feels like no time has passed at all. You you get to meet up with all your homies, and it's special.
Yeah, and so this is the first time that I've been to an Adepticon myself, and the thing that I was the most looking forward to was seeing old friends again and meeting up with some people that I knew from the internet but hadn't actually met in person. That's what I was the most excited about.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, and it's funny, because I think if someone's never been to Adepticon, they kind of visualize all those tournament tables, and that's kind of what gets broadcast out into the world as what Adepticon is. But anyone that comes here and hangs out in our corner of Adepticon sees that it's like a lot of people just shooting the shit, like painting, kit bashing, just talking, hanging out, and that quality time with other hobbyists or like people in the community, it's so much better than the rest of that, in my gracious opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you can still do all of the
you do what makes you happy,
but
the hanging out with friends is really special.
Yeah, and I think perhaps it could even be something that people maybe starting out going to conventions, it's with like the tournament scene and stuff, and then hopefully eventually discover that there's more to it, or there could be more to it.
Right.
And I ultimately find meeting up with people more rewarding than maybe winning a kill team's tournament.
Right.
Yeah, we didn't even sign up for any games. We just bumped into some people and we're like, hey, you want to play some more time? And, oh, okay, I'm ready to go. But the amount of nice people, even though you haven't ever talked to them or met them, and this is something I find very unique, especially here in the States. People are so warm-hearted and welcoming, actually. Yeah, it's amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah, and I think for me, it's been really exciting kind of making some of the connections, like you said, with people who I recognize some of their work, but I haven't put a name to a face yet, and then I get a chance to do that. That's really cool. And I've had this happen a couple times now, and then you meet up with them at like the next convention or the next get-together or whatever, and it's like old buddies getting together again, like, hey, what's up? So that's been really fun. And we've been running around a little bit. Mark's been working on his Gawkler, which is like this incredible Mordheim kind of like indie, his artwork, and showcasing some other artists, his little magazine that he's doing, and showing some Mordheim enthusiasts that who weren't savvy with it, like their faces light up so much when they get to see it. So we've been having fun running around and showing that off to people.
Well, yeah, so it's kind of like the old town criers.
Yeah, exactly.
What I particularly like about it is, like, I was involved in the hobby when Mordheim was released and those town criers were being released at the time, but I was maybe 14 or something then, and I didn't have the money to be playing Mordheim as well, so it's cool to now be interested in Mordheim and more involved in playing it and have something like what you're working on there, Mark, as like, all right, so I can kind of experience the town crier-esque thing being released while I am actually involved in it.
Oh, and guys,
it's probably cooler.
So here's the thing. I'll speak to it because he's incredibly humble, and he won't. So I'll speak to it. It is so good. It is so good. And I know there's other people that have tried to do like a town crier type thing. What he's doing is more interesting because it has the vibe of Mordheim without being exclusively Mordheim stuff. So it offers like, here's how I do this terrain piece. Here's how a painting technique. Here's just showcasing one of my friends who's an artist. It's more encompassing while still feeling like grimdark, and like it could totally be applied to just Mordheim if that's your cup of tea. But the production value, his writing is really good, even though English is not his first language. His writing is awesome, and the artwork that he does is beautiful. It's so cool. It's really exciting. So yeah, to any of your listeners that haven't checked it out, they should absolutely jump on that.
Thank you, guys. It means a lot to me, really.
And also, Mark, what was the impetus to start doing it? And I guess, how can people find
it? It came up when I was sick. I was really, really sick. I got the flu, and luckily not Corona, something else got into me. And I was at home on a leave for almost 2 weeks, and I got so bored, but I couldn't focus on painting miniatures. And my truest or biggest passion is actually drawing and painting, if it's acrylic, oil, or just simple inks on whatever kind of medium paper, for instance. And I was watching a lot of Adrian Smith Arts, and he runs his YouTube channel, and he got me hooked into using watercolors for the first time. And that was the first time I ever got to try them out. They are very tricky and a pain in the ass, but and it took me a couple of days to get some sort of feeling for these. And then I was like, okay, let's draw whatever came to my mind. And it was mostly like quick sketches, etc. And I was looking also into the Mordheim rule book, and somehow it was like, oh, maybe I just write a little scenario or a little tutorial on, because many people were asking me how you do this, how you do that. And then I thought of, okay, why not creating something similar? And then people were like, you should run a Patreon if you could teach certain things, etc. And I was thinking of, okay, lots of people run a Patreon account, and I'm not the best artist out there. So there are people like Roman Lappart, who just released the Patreon on the same day that I did. I'm definitely not close to him, but of course, people know him and they really want to learn his style, but what do I have to offer instead? And I was thinking of releasing some sort of hobby magazine with a miniature that is 3D, which is sculpted. I mostly do the sculpting myself, send it to a guy like Mario Garcia, aka Gray Sculptor on Instagram, who is an amazing 3D artist, and he does incredible conventional sculpting as well. And I talk to him and I love what he's doing, so whatever I give to him, he totally understands what I want. I don't even have to say him, no, change this or that. So I came up with that idea of having a sort of e-zine with different types of content, mostly the same thing, but also boosting other creative artists out there. So I'm not only one to focus on my stuff, but giving a space for people who I admire a lot. And maybe writing some sort of things. I had the honor of working with you guys even, yeah? So Adam was glad enough or was happy to share some content with me, some exclusive content even, and that meant the whole world for me. Even Sam Lotfi, that amazing comic artist who shared some stuff with me, who I published in one of the issues. So by now I had 4 issues published, working on the 5th, and people think it's more time exclusive by now, which is not the case, because I will introduce other things as well. Since Alex, my buddy over here, he produces his own games, like that amazing Dead by Lad Western stuff. He is actually producing another game, Bloody Hollow, which I'm so happy I got to meet his family and his hometown, so I fully understand what got or why he is writing these kind of things. So I'm totally looking forward to finally create a board for that game, painting up some miniatures, maybe even do some artwork. So whatever comes to my mind, I just put it inside that magazine and maybe have some other people. So if there is any artist out there who likes my artwork or would like to add something, please just write me. I'm open for anything. So yeah, and I'm again very thankful you guys enjoy it. It means a lot, since you are hobby heroes of mine and you do great stuff, and if you think that stuff is cool, that's all I ever wanted.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, and it's exciting to hear that you're helping to get the word out about other cool artists as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the special thing about this part of the hobby space. I think a lot of people are collaborative and very enthusiastic about other people's work in a very positive and healthy way. And that's why I have felt so welcomed in it. And that's what's made me fall in love with the hobby again, is this particular, you know, kind of some of the Grimdark guys, the Nemo guys, and this whole side, like, of the Creative 28 type community is so welcoming and positive. I think it's really a really special part of the community.
Well, I would also say that the community aspect is a thing that has helped keep me interested in all of it. And if it was just Warhammer 40,000, I don't know if my interest would have been held.
Agreed.
Quite as long. And particularly now with so many people making their own games and doing their own spins on things, there's always a new thing to find and get enthusiastic about.
Yeah,
definitely.
Well, I guess I can let the both of you go. There's a bunch of things that you could probably do today. I'm glad we had the opportunity to talk, and particularly glad, Mark, you were able to get over here from Germany to visit Adepticon, and great to see you again outside the confines of Mordheim. But
they're still here. It's still here.
The problem is he spoiled me. Now that he made that trip to visit, I know he's capable of it. And now I'm expecting him to do it again. Oh, so
definitely not the last time I'm here to see you guys. Well, thank you so much again. You honor me, and I'm happy to see all of you three. And have some drinks, annoy you, and share hobby stuff. And,
Well, thanks a lot.
Greg, always cool chatting with you. And keep doing what you're doing, man. Love the podcast.
Both of you. See you soldier guys. On. Thank you. All right, everybody. It's Greg. We're back at Adepticon 2024, and I'm here with Martin McCoy.
Hey, how's it going? Great to be back on the podcast.
Hell yeah. And with Mark again, Mosh Arts, to talk about art and cool things.
Thank you for having me again.
Glad to have you.
And this podcast is being sponsored by Malort.
Yeah, today. So Malort is a Chicago liquor made with wormwood, or I don't know, is it
something like that?
I don't know how they make it. It's pretty bitter. This is the first time I've had it, but we got a bottle of it, and some of us have been drinking it. It's pretty rough, very bitter.
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it.
Down the hatch,
Chicago style, baby.
Chicago style. Cheers.
Cheers.
Adam, you just drank it for the first time. What do you think of it? I'm going to give you the mic.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. I was trying, like with whiskey, often people will say you should let it sit on the tongue until it burns a little and then like drink it. I let it sit on the tongue for maybe 10 seconds and then it's like, all right, I'm done with this. And it does linger and it's pretty... It's pretty vile, I would say.
Yeah.
It has
Chicago style. Chicago style. We got Red Wet Skeleton.
Chicago styling. I think Malort also is aware that it's very vile to some people. I've seen like posters in bars that are say my pants aren't gonna shit themselves. Malort.
Well, Eli had told me that one of the advertisements that Malort did that really struck a chord with him is, I think it was, tonight's the night you fight your dad. Which, so that's pretty funny. And the back of the bottle says, Malort has the aroma and full-bodied flavor of an unusual botanical. Its bitter taste is savored by two-fisted drinkers.
People who really go hard.
Yeah.
And Mark, I think you enjoy it. You're finding it a pretty palatable.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it has a taste of coughing syrup. Yeah, like codeine drops. But maybe that's why I like it.
Yeah, honestly,
if you're a big Tussin head, this would be your jam.
Hitting the Tussin.
Yeah.
Does everybody in like Chi-Town just love like drinking cough syrup?
I would say that's a big part of the Between the Bulger and Me audience is Tussin heads. I've never had scissor.
No.
Okay. Is that just Tussin mixed with something, or that's?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Johnny, would you say Malort tastes like?
No.
Okay. Well,
I've never had scissors. Well, the sludge metal band Weed Eater, the singer Dixie Dave Collins, used to always tape a bottle of cough syrup to his mic stand that he would drink from. The last time I saw him, I don't know that they were still doing that, which is
yeah, that must
better.
Be catching. Maybe he saw what happened to Lil Wayne and he was like, I got to slow down on this.
I can tell you some real fun stories about people who rode the trip.
So maybe we're done talking about Malort. We can come back to it if we want to.
Mark, is this your first time in Chicago?
It is. First time in Chicago. It was my first time in New York, in upstate New York as well. I've been to Florida and to Texas once, and that's about it. But definitely not my last time here.
Oh, good. So we're not technically in Chicago. We're outside of it in a suburb called Schaumburg, which is one of the ugliest strip mall stretches I've ever seen, I think. And I think about all the like Europeans and people visiting the U.S. for the first time and just seeing malls stacked on top of malls on top of malls. And I
it's not beautiful old towns and such.
Yeah.
No.
It's kind of, I mean, it's maybe perfectly dystopian in a way of how many Chipotles and Red Lobsters there are. Well, stretching into infinity.
We have those areas as well, so just have to go to Eastern Germany.
Oh, yeah. I'm just afraid somebody sees this and they think it's the entirety of all we've got.
No.
Well, so, Martin, you've been showing off some of your work for your upcoming pen and paper RPG, Moss Cairn.
That is correct. And we have some miniatures that we're showing that Mike Gundam Hobby Official... Gundam Official Hobby.
I think it's helped. Gundam Official Hobby.
Okay. Yeah. Painted up and made a diorama for that I'm really excited about. It's very... The project is really coming along and starting to, like, build a momentum that's really encouraging to me. And we've got Shane the Blind Man and Bill Ford attached as writers. So things are cooking. And it's really cool to show people what I've been working on and hear feedback and... People have been really nice and supportive in that.
Yeah, you recently did an illustration of a tortoise warrior that is my current favorite, but I'm big into the reptiles, so.
Well, I had the wires really roasting me at the booth about how there aren't enough salamanders or frogs.
Yeah.
I was attacked, but I mean...
I don't know. We have a strong allegiance to amphibians and reptiles. Mm-hmm. So don't let our preferences dictate what you do with your game.
No, I mean, you are not alone in that. Some people are very... It's interesting to find out how passionate some people are about one animal. But
Hellbender Wizard. They need to be... I think that needs to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark, the Hellbender is the third largest salamander species in the world, and they're in the eastern part of the United States.
Okay.
They're pretty big. I think the largest salamander species in the world are in China and Japan, but the third is in Pennsylvania in the eastern coast of the United States. I don't know, maybe like a foot long. They're pretty big. And they're gnarly looking.
Wow, crazy.
They live in fast-moving freshwater streams.
We have very small ones, actually, but you almost don't find them anymore. They're so endangered. Yeah.
Oh.
And they are these fire salamanders. Yeah, that one. Yeah. That one, I saw them twice in my whole life in the nature, but I was wandering around. And I got lucky. Ever since, never seen them anywhere.
Well, so at least in the eastern coast of the United States is the salamander capital of the world. So there are tons and tons of different salamander species on the eastern coast of the United States. And there are a ton of them. It's the sort of thing, unless you're looking for them, you wouldn't necessarily see them.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Shy guys. You got to make an appointment most of the time.
Yeah, they're under rocks, hiding under rocks or under rocks and streams and stuff. But yeah, we love them. But
I mean, they'd be a great fit. I'm mostly drawing woodland creatures because that's like a very fun thing to draw, but breaking it up a little bit, like that tortoise, and then going a little bit further from that.
Well, that would be swell. So a little bit earlier, Mark, we were talking about how you've started dipping into watercolors and stuff. And
yeah. Oh, yeah.
When I think about watercoloring, like, I think about Martin's watercolored work. So
thank you. Yeah, so have you... You have posted any of it? I don't think I've seen anything.
So I'm quite hesitant. I don't know why in posting art stuff.
Yeah.
So basically, I just got into... into using watercolors. They are very tricky. And I recently I explained how I got into it. Was basically I was sick watching Adrian Smith posting some of how he does art color, watercolor art. And I was like, okay, let's try it out. And the first ones I messed up completely and I was almost giving up in continuing with it. I'm more familiar with oil paintings acrylics. But... It's amazing that you can create somehow details which you will only see from a distance, and it doesn't matter how well you paint those details, but your brain somehow adds up the rest of it, so it looks whole. But the closer you look, you're just like, oh, it's totally blurred. Yeah, and this is a nice thing to use. And I was even thinking of using watercolors and adding also acrylic paint to it, or maybe even an airbrush to just experiment around. More like technical painting stuff, and I've seen your artwork, and it totally got me hooked into it, and I'm so happy I got to meet you here.
Oh, that's so nice to hear.
Thank you so much for the art print you gifted me. I already have a spot above my hobby space where I will frame it.
Oh, cool. I mean, I think this whole weekend feels like a lot of mutual admiration of meeting people that I'm so impressed with your work. Like the Necromunda vampire accounts you've done are just so fun and cool. Those dregs.
Thank you.
My buddy sent them to me on Instagram. He shared them, and I was like in the process of sharing them with him. Really, it's been a pleasure to meet you. And it's such an interesting part of what we do. Like, how you can be comfortable in one thing, one way you're expressing yourself, and then the amount of like self-criticism and bogged down you can get when you shift over to something else. But like finding that compassion or patience with yourself and like letting go and having fun can be so rewarding. I find watercolor especially, I'm surprised to hear you say you find it more difficult than oil, or that it's, in some ways, I love it. It seems the most forgiving, and oil seems the most punishing. So it's like an opposite, because I feel like I can layer watercolor fast and messy, very without a plan. But oil and acrylic, I need to have mixed things really well and thought about it.
But when the forgiving thing about oil colors is you can wipe them off.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
When you did something wrong or made a mistake, you just wipe it off. Mm-hmm. Watercolors, one mistake, either you manage to blend it in perfectly, or it just stains there forever, right? And
I think what you were suggesting of using some acrylic or airbrush, I would lean into for sure. I definitely don't do like a pure watercolor. I think that would kill me. I like making sure that everything is painted and just with watercolor. I use it as a base because I love its kind of organic blending and its messiness. But then putting layers of gouache and ink and pencil on top of that, like keeping it moving and not getting bogged down. And like, this is the version of it. I call it my blob phase in the beginning, where it's just like a bunch of like pigment on the paper and it's not well defined. But I'll like gladly mix like white acrylic into the watercolor, so then I can build up on something that I don't like. I'll like completely erase that part similar to oil, but oil just takes longer to dry.
Oh yeah, it does. I have some oil projects in the future where I'm thinking of painting some sort of portraits from my characters to make them. I'm more into that super hyper-realistic stuff when it comes to oil painting. And I was thinking of having a Caravaggio Rembrandt-style painting of Warhammer or Mordheim miniatures in the future. Mm. And I'm trying to do that as soon as I have the right space, because right now I lack the opportunity to paint with oil paintings because they stink.
Yeah.
They take a couple of days to dry out properly. So at the moment, it's not possible, unfortunately.
That would be really cool to see. I'd be very excited about it. Did you handed me your publication? What is that? What is that called again?
Der Gaukler, or the Gaukler, how you'd pronounce it, maybe. And so it means jester, the jester in English. And it's basically a hobby magazine that I'm creating, and I talked previously about it. So, it's running and it's happening, and I'm currently writing already the fifth issue. And
cool, congratulations!
And the first one, the shittiest one. Actually,
did you do art for that?
Yes.
Oh,
all the artwork.
I didn't realize that.
Every artwork I do for now was by myself. I had Sam Lotfi creating something for me, or he gave me the rights to publish it in one of the issues, and always also wrote about him. And I'd happy to do an issue where I talk about you, because one of the main aspects is not only showing my stuff, but artists and hobby enthusiasts like I am, to show who they are, spread the word. And I'd be happy to have you in one of my issues.
Oh, I would love that. When you talked to me about that, I remembered and thought immediately of this piece I did based on a Mordheim warband I'd done. I know you were saying that it's not Mordheim explicit or exclusively, but
that's what everybody thinks. It's the word on the street that it's just Mordheim.
Yeah, but it's not.
It has
not,
the not. Town Crier-esque aesthetic to it that I think everybody sees that and thinks that mm-hmm. it's just that, but it's more than that.
Yeah. So maybe it would be more fun to do a different piece, but I have this piece that doesn't have a home and has never been used for anything, of like a long lion rampart banner and then like dead zombies lined along it, that I made for my Mordheim warband, of this narrative I was really excited about for a while, that they were like human mercenaries who had tried to go kill a necromancer.
Okay, awesome.
And he like caught them in a glamour,
mm-hmm.
and he's like been tricking them like and being their puppet master for years. So they think they're still these shining examples of imperial like glory and honor, but their bodies are rotting apart and they're like murdering the necromancers.
I'm sold.
And then I like to imagine that when one of them dies, like the glamour falls away for a few seconds and they can like see what they've become and how far the illusion has been stretched and what they've been doing.
I'll send you the all the other issues that I've done, so for you to just get a glimpse at it, what I'm writing about, it does not need to be Mordheim exclusive. It could be about anything you like, mm-hmm. your artwork, whatever inspires you. Totally up to whatever in that regard.
Seriously, oh, yeah.
I'd be honored to write about you yourself. That would be amazing. So by now, I do all the editing myself, all the artwork, all the miniature stuff. And so I hope it... I can continue with it, probably not every month, maybe every second month, because I want to keep up and maintain the quality
mm-hmm.
and focus more on artwork specifically. Yeah.
Have you ever been in 28? Have you ever submitted anything?
No, I haven't.
I feel like that would be a great project for 28 to shout out. Like
I'd be happy to do so, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, 28's always looking for people.
Mark, submit stuff to 28 right now.
Okay. I'm
or I just will. Like I think we could like shout it out in the Instagram. I think you're doing exactly what we're all so passionate about, is like people getting involved and doing their own thing, never trying to be like an authority in anything, and just okay. be like let's all do this because it makes the hobby richer.
Yeah. If it's fine, I can also send some of my older artworks, that those that when I was 15, 16 or something, things I've painted them. So that's why I call myself Mosh Arts. So it didn't have anything to do with my Warhammer stuff so far, but like Mosh, like from moshing, mosh pit, so brutal and hardcore, which my artwork mostly is kind of grim dark. And I kept on, with that name, and so for now I'm Mosh Arts, doing miniatures as well, but it's mostly focusing on the grim dark aspects, or my sort of interpretation of grim darkness.
Yeah, everybody has a slightly different thought of what that means.
But I'd be happy. I'd be super happy, and it's amazing to meet all these hobby heroes of mine. And I didn't know that you were here, Martin. Yeah. So and then I posted it, and you were like, "Oh, I'm at the convention as well." And I was, "Oh, I didn't know you were actually there."
But, uh-huh.
And then I finally got to meet you and meet up with you.
Yeah, it's been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
I think I really reconnected to the hobby, I think, here last year. Just being in this hallway and meeting so many people and realizing how human and kind everybody is, that it's not just like great artists who are kind of cold and hard to get along with or anything. There's just so much humility and human interaction and goofing around that really has majorly affected, I think, what I'm interested in and the tenor of my life right now. I'm just so much happier getting back into it and being surrounded by such fun, creative people.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, I guess we can let you go and find other creative people. You can find other creative people to talk to and not just talk to us all the time.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you guys are some of the happiest people. I get the biggest smile when I see the triplets walking my way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Also, have that secret project, has anybody hinted at that on the podcast yet?
It hasn't been hinted at yet.
Mm. Well, there's a secret noisy project to be for hinted 28, at.
Secret 28 magazine-related project. Maybe a little noisy.
Maybe a little discordant.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe Martin's musical emergence will be part of it. I'll be submitting to it.
Hopefully mine too.
Yeah.
So everybody be on the lookout.
Okay, I will.
All right, thanks everybody.
Great talking to you guys.
Yeah, thank you guys. You see you, bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Dragged into Turbo Lasers. If you have any questions or suggestions, don't hesitate to contact us through Instagram or leave a comment on our YouTube channel or on our blog, BetweenTheBolterAndMe.com. We also stream on Twitch every week and would love to hear from you there as well. If you'd like to support us, please feel free to leave a review of our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, or subscribe to our channel on YouTube and Twitch.